Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and our commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, April 15th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, I hate to say, usually I say happy Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Happy tax day? Nah, can't say that.
Well, you could say something like that tomorrow. I mean, you've only got, for those of you, I like to file early, which is about 11 p.m. For those of you who wait right up until midnight, tomorrow's going to be a good day. One way or another, you got to get this thing filed.
You know, many years ago, when I lived in Arizona, I remember my mother. She was a late filer that year. She stayed up, you know, she worked hard. She was a hardworking woman. And she had to, I mean, it was like 9, 10 o'clock, you know, she was running from her job to make sure that her taxes got stamped because the post offices remained open at that time. I don't know if they still do, but they usually remained late. The particular one at that time was open later, so people could make sure that their taxes were postmarked the 15th. Mm-hmm. And when I saw her run to that post office to make sure that her taxes were postmarked, that is when my eyes really kind of opened. This is probably 30 years ago. Maybe more. It's when my eyes really opened, and it's like, what is wrong with that picture? To have that type of fear.
Yep.
That you have to be running, that you're so fearful of being late and what they can do to you if, by heavens, you make a mistake or you're just not there to get it postmarked on time. And they nothing in this... You know, you shouldn't fear anything like that, not from your government.
The government disagrees with that. They like the people to be fearful.
I know, and who am I?
I'm sure they have probably stands where they can watch the post office from the dark, and the government officials go, look at that woman running there.
It was just very disturbing, Al.
I understand.
It was just very disturbing, and that's probably the one thing that opened up my eyes. And I never rushed again to get my tax. I mean, I'll do the extensions if I'm late or things like that. But, and, you know, I'm usually done early, but I don't, anyway. So today is tax day. We're going to be talking a little bit about that here in just a little bit. But first, we're going to go to gold. We have gold up 10.50. 10.50 at gold on gold. At 1203.40, silver's up 16 cents today at 16.39. We have platinum up 11 at 11.66, and palladium is up 6 points at 774. The USDX today is down 41.41 at 98.33. Crude oil was up 2.67. at 55.96, and the paper markets today were up big, up strong on the announcements from Draghi before and after he was attacked. The Dow was up 75 points, although it was up triple digits most of the day, come off its high, landing at 75 at 18,112. Excuse me. The NASDAQ was up 33 at 5,011. The S&P was up 10 at 2106. 10-year yield, 1.90%. Euro, 107. 107 on the euro. We were talking, you and I talked a little bit prior to the program. We're talking about taxes. And there was one website that, you know, posted some interesting articles today, various opinions and so forth on taxes, the Patriot Post. You can go online, sign up for their free articles and so forth. And, you know, they report a lot of, you know, they'll send out the current news topics. And today they wrote, of course, about taxes. And Madison wrote of government welfare programs. He said, I cannot undertake to lay my finger on that article of the Constitution which granted a right to Congress of expending on objects of benevolence the money of their constituents. Charity is no part of the legislative duty of the government. Neither Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution nor its Sixth Amendment gave Congress the authority to collect taxes for bailing out banks, mortgage institutions, of course, this isn't part of what Madison wrote, but of automakers, or to subsidize production or service sectors like healthcare, or to fund education and welfare, or to issue tens of thousands of earmarks for special interest pork projects. Nor is Congress authorized to institute countless conditions for the redistribution of wealth in its nearly 75,000 pages and 4 million words of tax code alone, or to impose millions of regulations on everything from carbon emissions to toilet water volume.
Well, it's true. The government has no business getting involved in our charities. In fact, they should have left the charities to the churches. And there are a bunch of reasons for that. For one thing, it would allow local people to become involved in the church, in the charity, to help poor people in your community. And there's something to be said for that. You know, charity is not simply something that is of benefit to the poor. It's even of benefit to the people who contribute to the charity and participate in the charity. They get something out of it also, in my opinion. And we are ill-served by surrendering our obligation to engage in charity, we're ill-served by surrendering that to the government. All right? I saw a couple of studies. I believe it was the Rand Institute. I can't recall clearly. This goes back in the 1990s. They did two studies, actually. They calculated how much of the money that the government collects that was earmarked for particular groups like minorities or women or children or whatever. And I said, we've got to raise $1 million or 10 million or 100 million or a billion or whatever to help the poor. How much of the money reached? They got $1 billion out of the American taxpayers. How much of it reached the poor? About 200 million. 250 million in the first study. Another one a couple of years later said it was down to 200 million. In other words, government consumed somewhere between 75% and 80% of the money that you and I are paying to help the poor, the blacks, the women, the children. Government consumed 75% to 80% of that money, and government-approved middlemen. They got that. And the women, the children, the poor, they got 20 cents out of every dollar you paid. Now, the point is if you were inclined to really be charitable and you really wanted to help the poor, one of the first things you should do is stop helping the poor by means of government. Instead of giving $100 to the government, of which only 20 will reach the poor, why don't you go do your business with a church? Give the church $50, of which 45 will reach the poor. You understand? The poor will get twice as much, and you will pay only half as much if you can get that government and government-proved middlemen out of the equation. It's better for everybody except government. Comes, oh, we're going to help the poor. We're going to take care of the women, the children. How's it really worked out? Has this nation truly benefited from government's involvement in welfare and entitlement programs? Have we really benefited from that? I mean, you can point to the black community and the rest, and you say, well, they've, you know, it's not an easy question to answer. But have blacks on balance been well served by welfare? One of the requirements of welfare, government got in and say, hey, we're going to do the charity. We don't need the churches anymore for that. We'll take care of that. One of their requirements was black woman, if she had a number of kids, she could have all the kids she wanted, at least for a while. But she couldn't keep a man in the house with her. Right? Well, what did that do? It destroyed black families. The father became irrelevant. Government, in its infinite wisdom, drove the old black tomcat out the house. And then we have generations of children being raised without fathers. Don't even know how to be fathers. Don't know what to look for in a father. Did the African-American community get enough welfare? Did they get enough money, enough entitlements out of government to compensate for having lost their fathers? I'll bet they didn't. Subjective argument, well, you know, it's another example of the idea that we would be better off. If you want to help a poor person, go help them yourself. You can take 20 out of your wallet and give it directly to the poor person, or you can take 100 out of your wallet and send it to government, and they'll keep 80 and give 20 to the poor person. Which is a better deal? Yeah. In the end, most of the charitable programs that the government operates are programs where the charity goes to the government. Let's support the government, the government regulators, and the government's approved middlemen. They'll get rich. They'll do well. The poor won't do so well, and the people who are productive won't do so well, but the government-approved middlemen will. And it's part of a mindset that doesn't serve this country well. Very difficult to unroot, to uproot. Very difficult to convince people, look, you're better off without the entitlements. You're better off learning to work for yourself and support yourself than you are by giving money to the government or, in the alternative, taking money from the government. You're better off without it. That's a tough sale. Who will ever accept the argument that they're better off without a free lunch? That's what government stock and trade is. We'll give you a free lunch. Vote for me and I'll give you a free lunch.
Speaking of free lunches, by 2010, we're going to continue a little bit on this theme for this first break. By 2010, taxes on the top 50% of income earners totaled almost 97% of government revenue, while some 40% of Americans bore virtually none of the cost of government. Right. Much more ominous is the fact that almost 35% of Americans are now utterly dependent upon government. Right. Thus, they are predisposed to vote for the redistribution of others' incomes rather than work for their own.
Yep.
And in the words of socialist playwright George Bernard Shaw, a government which robs Peter to pay Paul can always depend on the support of Paul.
Yep.
When George Bush took office, and we all know these numbers have been mentioned all the time, but George Bush took office in January 2001, our national debt was $5.8 trillion. Today, under Obama, it is $18.1 trillion and continuing to skyrocket. And This year, working Americans will pay almost $5 trillion in taxes to federal and state governments. But the federal government still runs a regular deficit, and the national debt per taxpayer amounts to $155,000. And to put that in perspective, if the average family budgeted like the government, they would spend more than $60,000 on income of $52,000, even though they are already in debt of $310,000. Don't you wish the world? Hey, I'm in debt to a tune of $310,000.
Who's your banker? Who is it that loaned you that $310,000? You know, and because boy, I'd like to do some business with that banker myself.
Oh, me too. You know,
before he goes out of business because he's going to.
Yes.
The whole thing is just nuts. Again, it's not just a question of how big is the debt. That's one way of looking at it. But the flip side is how much have they loaned to the government? The government says there's $18 trillion in the hole. Again, John Williams says it's $100 trillion. Lawrence Kotlikoff, economist Lawrence Kotlikoff, and the Congressional Budget Office say, no, it's over $200 trillion. All right? The idea is not just, oh, do we owe a lot of money? The idea is a lot of people are holding the government's notes. And the government can't possibly repay its debts, which means all of those notes, those markers, those IOUs, those U.S. Treasury bonds, they are all in jeopardy of being of default. All right? Not all of them will default, but my judgment, 80, 90% will. Now, there'll be 10% that gets through. 10%, 20% might be payable. But 80%, in my opinion, at least, maybe 90%, will not be payable. So it's not just a situation to say, the debt is backed up by creditors holding pieces of paper where the government promised to pay those bills, and it's not going to pay them. And when those people find out their pieces of paper are worthless, then those people are going to say, oh, gee, I've just lost my assets, for one thing, and for another thing, that paper, that perceived paper wealth, will be wiped out of the economy. Let's suppose that the government debt was only $18 trillion. And let's suppose that the government only defaulted on half of it, $9 trillion. Can this economy withstand the loss of $9 trillion in paper assets? Because that's what's going to happen. When they default on the debt, they wipe out a correlative pile of paper assets. Can we survive the loss of $9 trillion? I don't think we can. The economy is something like $16 trillion a year. Are we going to lose half of the money in the whole country? Half the money that's at least in the GDP in 1 year? Are we going to lose that and still stay afloat? It's not impossible, but I don't think it's going to happen. And then if the debt is as great as some people, again, John Williams at shadowstats.com, Congressional Budget Office, they're 100 to 200 trillion. No way. Can't be paid. Ever, ever, ever will never be paid in full. Can't be done. What happens if we wipe out $80 trillion in debt? What happens if the government is forced to admit how big the debt really is? And they can't get away with lying about it. Say, oh, we owe $18 trillion. No, you don't. You owe about $100 trillion and maybe $200 trillion. That's what you really owe. Mm-hmm. When are they going to come clean? What will force them? How will they deal with the debt problem if they can't even admit the magnitude of the debt? Can Obama come up, take the podium, and say, hey, my fellow Americans, you're never going to believe this, but guess what? We don't owe $18 trillion. We owe $100 trillion. Can he do that? Can any politician come up and admit how much in debt we really are? And then come in, then follow that admission, maybe not right that minute, but follow it soon enough with an admission, and guess what? We can't pay it. We're going to have to default on all of that. I mean, lies and lies and lies. What a tangled web we weave when first politicians practice to deceive the public. And it just gets more and more complex. And we look at it and we see it in the tax code. What'd they say? 4 million words or something, Melody? I don't remember if that's what they said or not, but it's still just, it's not for clarification. The tax code doesn't clarify. It doesn't make it easier for you people to understand. It makes it harder for you to understand. It makes it harder for you to discover the truth. And in my opinion, that's why they keep adding to it. Instead of simplifying, they make it more complex and more complex and more complex until no one on this earth, not one man or woman, can fully understand what's going on in the tax code. You don't understand. There's nobody listening. There is no one listening to this program right now who fully understands the income tax code. And most of the people listening can't even understand the little bit that applies to their 1040. I mean, the tax code includes things for how you tax airplanes and, I don't know, there's ships and boats and everything else. There's all kinds of, there's an enormous variety in the tax code. You don't even, but the vast majority of people can't even understand the 1040. Huh? What kind of a tax code is it when the majority of the people can't even understand what's going on? And why does it persist? Melody and I were talking earlier. There's been studies indicate 70% of the American people want a simplified tax code. It should be easy for a politician to step in and say, ha-ha, would-be politician, I'm running for Congress, and if you vote for me, I guarantee to simplify the tax code. Well, 70% of the people want that. You're pretty much going to get their vote. It should be a standard arrow in the quiver of every would-be politician, and yet almost no one talks about it. And even those who talk about it aren't going to get it accomplished. Why? Government doesn't want a simplified tax code. Government wants a tax code that is so complex that no one can understand it. And we can speculate as to what the government's reasons are for wanting an incomprehensible tax code, but that's what they want. That's certainly what we've had. It's what we've got. And I don't think, you know, nothing's impossible, but I don't anticipate a true tax simplification movement to attract any attention in the Congress or the Senate. I don't expect that to happen anytime soon. There's no evidence of it right now that I'm able to understand. So, what can you tell you? The world is a strange and deceitful place. You're not just ignorant. You know, a lot of people are confused by all of this. And some of us would have to suppose, gee, I don't know why I'm so ignorant. How is it that I don't? They don't want you to understand. They don't want you to understand. The system has been engineered where it becomes so incredibly complex, contradictory, confusing. Come in and complain about it, and they will send you to reading chapters or sections or whatever, and by the time you get done reading, you'll be so confused, you won't necessarily remember your own name. So, again, just part of a world that is based on lies and exaggerations, and how long can that world last? I guess it's going to have left to consider how long it lasts after we return from some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis with Melody Cedars for Non-Financial Survival. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with the Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to finish up that segment with, there was a, on the Patriot Post, they had 102 years of income tax, what the difference was between 1913 and 2015. And the top tax bracket in 1913 was 7%, in 2015, it's 39.6%. The total tax revenues in 1913 was $16.9 billion, and that is in today, based on today's dollars. In 2015, it was $3.19 trillion. Not a lot of change there, Al.
Yeah, a lot of change, a lot of government growth, and that's what government wants.
Yep. Total number of 10.
Bigger, 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 and they want to argue that the bigger they get, the better they can serve you, and it's absolute, I mean, it's nonsense. It's an absolute lie.
Total number of 1040s filed in 1913 was 358,000, and in 2015 there was over 100, close to 147 million. Total pages in tax code in 1913, 400. And, of course, as we mentioned earlier in the program, total pages in tax code, closer to 74,000.
Pages.
Pages.
Uh-huh. Went from 400 to 74,000.
Yes.
Whew. You know, it's just insane when you stop and think about it. We're talking about a time when this country was at least on the verge of becoming the most powerful in the world. We had a few hundred pages of tax code. And now, while the nation is on the verge of a significant decline, we have 74,000 pages of tax code. Is this just a coincidence, or are we listening, or are we looking at evidence of cause and effect? And I contend it's cause and effect. Government's grown too big. They've intruded in everything. And as a result, we are all being diminished. And the government doesn't mind. They says, oh, the solution to the problem, are you poor? Is your income down? All right? You're not making as much money as you did back in the day. Well, solution to that is vote for Congressman John Smith, and he will do something to make you rich. No, he won't. He'll do something to make himself rich, or to make the people that he truly represents, the special interests that he truly represents, he'll make them rich. But not you. You're just ordinary people. And the government is not going to do anything to help you. So And it's not just government's fault. It's our fault because we don't essentially grab the congressman, grab the senator, and explain to them in no uncertain terms that this stuff's going to end. You're going to do what's right for the majority of the people, not for the special interest. You know, that's one of the things. There was an amendment to the Constitution that came to be called the Missing 13th Amendment, and it prohibited titles of nobility. All right, and it said anyone who grants any title of nobility except one, you lose your status as a citizen and you can no longer hold public office. The bill was, it was a strange situation, and I know about it because I wrote a little book on it back in the 1990s. Some people brought their evidence to me, David Dodge, and I can't remember his friend's name who passed on. I can't remember, a former police officer. They were sitting in a library in Maine, and they asked the librarian, it was an old library, it went back into the early 1800s, might have gone back into the 1700s or earlier than that, I don't know, but it was an old library, it wasn't just built in the last 50 years or something. They're sitting there and they asked the librarian, bring them the oldest copy of the Constitution she had in the archives, and she did. Brought them one from, I don't know, 1800s, in the 1800s. And they read the copy of the Constitution, and it had a 13th Amendment that is no longer there today. And this is the one that prohibited titles of nobility. Now, a title of nobility, when they first saw this, they jumped on the idea that a title of nobility would prohibit lawyers. All right? Lawyers use the term Esquire after their name. They allegedly have a title of nobility. This would have prohibited titles of nobility. A bunch of people jumped on it. They said, oh, we'll get rid of the lawyers. Well, that was a nice idea, but I read it and I understood that it was far bigger than that. It would have meant no special interest legislation. It would have meant that you can't pass a law that favors the people over here and not the people on the other side. You had to only pass laws that were good for everybody at the same time. And if they did that, we wouldn't need Congress to meet more than a couple of weeks every year. If you cut out special interest legislation, there's almost nothing for Congress to do. They could meet for a couple of weeks a year and go back home to regular jobs. It was a powerful amendment and, again, would have stripped the power of Congress to pass special interest legislation. The amendment was ratified. I think they needed, at that point, the amendment was ratified by something like 10 states, 8 or 10 states, I don't remember the number. They needed one more to ratify, and then the War of 1812 broke out. And during the War of 1812, it was forgotten. The amendment was forgotten. A few years after the war, somebody came back and said, what up? What about, they called a couple of states, including Virginia, and they said, have you ratified this amendment yet? And Virginia sent copies of a new state constitution that included in the appendix a copy of the Constitution of the United States. And they sent copies of this new state constitution, including a copy of the Constitution of the United States and appendix. They sent it to the President of the United States and Secretary of State, and maybe the President of the Senate or Speaker of the House, I don't remember. But they sent it to key government officials, and when they looked at it, they looked at the new version of the Constitution of the United States, and it included this 13th Amendment. By this means, it's believed that Virginia announced that it had ratified this 13th Amendment. But they never found an official document, to my knowledge, that Virginia expressly said we've ratified. Everything, you know, walk like a duck and quack like a duck and so on. Well, that amendment was printed on, we found something like, when I wrote a book on this back in, 1992, 93, someplace in there. All right, we collected the information from a host of archives where the amendment was found in different old books and whatever. And we had something like 23 separate states had ratified this amendment or printed it as ratified from about 1812 on up to The last time I saw this was 1876. I think Wyoming was the last state to print a copy of the Constitution that included this missing, what is now a missing 13th Amendment. David Dodge, who did most of the research on this and gathered most of the paperwork, a few years after I'd written the book on this and written a book on it, David Dodge went to the archives that he'd traveled to in the first place, around the country, to round up the evidence. When he went back to those archives, every archive he went to, the books that he had found 6-8 years earlier, they're gone. And the evidence that he had found, it had disappeared. We have photocopies, but the actual evidence. So what's it all mean? It means government was determined from an early time in American history to turn itself into something massive, unconstitutional, that did not serve the American people per se, but instead exploited them for the benefit of certain special interests. And they continue to do so. How many congressmen do you have, or senators do you have, or presidents do you have, or have you had, who you think represented your best interest? They don't represent you or me. They represent whoever's putting money in their pocket. And it's a sad thing to say, but isn't it true? I mean, the voters are somebody government has to deal with, but the people they really represent are people that aren't voting for them per se, but are putting money in their pocket. And so the Constitution and the government spins in places, spins out of stability, and it goes in places that we all know are wrong and unconstitutional, but they're good for the special interests, and so they do it. So, blah, blah, blah. What do you think, Melody?
Well, absolutely. I mean, this morning I was watching an interview of Hank Paulson, you know, ex-Goldman Sachs, and, you know, he's... I mean, you're right. You know, he's pushing Jeb Bush. It's like, really? Mm-hmm. I mean, it is all about their interests. And, you know, they did ask him about the, you know, some of the younger ones, the Tea Party ones. And, you know, he just sort of, well, you know, I'll vote for who's best for this country.
Oh, boy.
And I just, I mean, you
well, I hope I live to see that
day. He stuttered a little bit when he spit that out.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm there, really? But it was a way to say, nope, I'm not going to vote for those Tea Partiers because, you know, they're just so far right. And but Jeb Bush is what it's going to be all about. And I can't even believe that the Republican Party would, I mean, is...
They'll do it if they... I don't even know what the
Jeb
Republican
Bush?
Party does. Sometimes
really?
They point candidates that I think are guaranteed to lose. Like McCain,
so is Hillary.
He handed the election to Obama, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
All right,
the minute he chose Palin.
I don't know if Republicans always even care about winning. Mitt Romney, he's another one, and he almost ran again this time. Thank God he had the, you know, sufficient intelligence and integrity to say, "Nah, I'm not going this time." You know?
Yeah, but what's funny is his handlers, who'd they go to? Jeb Bush.
Yeah, I know.
So, well, he didn't get him elected, so let's see if we let's hire these guys who can't run a campaign. I mean, it's just really is funny. I mean, it's like, who are these people anymore? They, as wealthy as they are, you would think they'd get some competent people in order to handle their campaigns.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, even...
Well, they'd get competent people, but not competent candidates. I mean, if you're going to run a puppet, you can't have a very intelligent puppet.
I mean, even Hillary.
I'd understand what was going on and decide to stand up for himself. Not a good deal. You need to control people like Karl Rove, right? And so far as he's running the political campaign for a candidate, Karl Rove, he's the guy that needs to be controlled. Get the guy elected while the puppet just stands up there and reads off the teleprompter.
Yeah.
You know, Obama, classic example. Hillary will be another one. I think Hillary is prone to making foolish remarks in public, in large meetings. Right? She's impulsive, which is, you know, not good. And she will say things as she did relative to someone where they were talking about the the four Americans that died at Benghazi, and she responded at one point, famously, "What difference does it make?" Essentially, who cares if they're dead? So what? They're done. Let's move on. Well, that's the kind of remark that can cost you the White House. And I'm going to guess that if Hillary gets into many big public confrontations, I'm going to bet she's going to say some things. She's liable to say some things that are pretty dumb.
Hubby will probably run to the rescue. But I saw, you know, as it was being bragged about who she hired to handle her campaign. He was a young up and coming and, you know, blah, 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 coming over from some other successful campaign. Well, her logo is a big H with a red arrow across the center of it, sort of. And there was a TV reporter going around asking people what they thought of it, and everybody thought that it meant the hospital. It was a sign for the hospital with an H.
If you're shot by an arrow, here's the hospital. They specialize in people have been attacked by Indians. So.
Yeah, but, you know, so, yeah, I mean, I think she's just meant to be a distraction. I still think O'Malley will be their nominee, but we'll see.
We shall see. It's part of the fun, I guess, if it can be construed. The best you can say is it's part of the fun. It might be part of the tragedy, but at least it's part of the interest, and we'll keep an eye on it. We'll take a break for some more commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, just a couple of financial news reports that came out today. Nothing earth-shattering. We mentioned earlier Mario Draghi, the president of the European Central Bank. He indicated that he's going to stick with its monthly bond purchases despite some of their signs of economic rebounding in their 19-country eurozone. I mean, it's very similar to here. I mean, you put a little stimulus into the markets and, hey, we have a recovery. It's just, I mean, it's almost going to the point of bizarre anymore.
Yeah.
It just kind of,
Where is it recovered anywhere on the face of the earth?
If it was anyone recovering, Greece would, you know, the problems with Greece wouldn't be so, you know, they wouldn't be about ready to leave the Eurozone. But China was also, today, their figures show that their manufacturing and retail sales slowed in January to March. Growth fell to 7% from the previous quarter, 7.3%. And, of course, this is the weakest performance since it tumbled to 6.1% in the first quarter of 2009. And then there's discussions that Beijing is going to look a little bit further to see if they're going to need a stimulus. So none of these economies can function unless there's a stimulus.
Which means what? It means none of them can stand on their own two feet.
Absolutely not.
Right? And the only way they can stimulate these things is with a measure of lies. They're saying, oh, we're putting $80 billion a month into the economy. Well, actually, all they're putting in is $80 billion in digital currency or paper currency, and it's all just lies. It doesn't really amount to anything. It's not as if they have taken money that someone has saved, someone has earned, someone has saved. They're just spending the money out of thin air. This is like me writing a check for $1 million. Say, ha-ha, I'm stimulating the economy. And to go buy myself a new home, a new car, whatever, with my $1 million check. But the check's no good. It's not redeemable. You understand? And as long as that's the case, all this stimulation is just a lie, an illusion. And how long can we deal with lies and illusions before it becomes apparent, look, this isn't going to work. This is like using witch doctors. We don't have economists. We have witch doctors. And they're going to put on a song and dance, and people are going to be suitably impressed. They're going to say, ooh, did you see the witch doctor dance? But what did he do? That's where we are, to my opinion. You know.
Well, then we're going to add a little more to this. The U.S. industrial production had the biggest drop in almost 6 years last month. And again, certainly shows the economy certainly not as strong as to support the employment numbers that they present. The Federal Reserve said Wednesday that industrial production, and that includes factories, utilities, and mines, slid 0.6% in March, and that's been the biggest drop since May of 2009. And U.S. home builders, they're feeling good. They're feeling optimistic about their prospects for a strong spring home selling season. Yeah, if you tell these people long enough that the economy is recovering and things are going great and you should have a good summer for home selling, certainly they're going to be a little more optimistic if they're being told things are better. But the National Association of Home Builders, Wells Fargo Builder Sentiment Index rose this month to 56. That's a full 4 points from March. And, of course, anything above 50 indicate more builders view sales conditions as good rather than poor. So
the world is going nuts.
They're bipolar, Al.
They're not just bipolar. That's one thing. But they are easily deceived. And we all are. Mm-hmm. They're not the only ones. We are all subject to this. We're all subject to giving the government credit. And they tell us stories, and we believe them. Even though the truth, if we bother to look for it, indicates, wait a second, I think those guys are fibbing. And it's incumbent on all of us, it's a peculiar thing. The economy is based so much on psychology that you can understand where government lies to us to try to cheerlead and try to make us believe things are, it's happy times are here again. And insofar as we believe that, then we go out and we make the happy times be here again. That's the theory. All right, so they've got to pump us up with lies, then we'll go out and work like little animals in order to restore the economy. I had a point there, and wherever it was, it drifted away while I was talking about it. What was I trying to say, Melody?
I'm sorry, Al.
You don't know.
How old are you?
I'll be 70 in a couple of weeks.
But
I'm one of those
but
senior
you know
moments.
But you know, when we talk about the government, you know, it's a whole bigger picture than that. I mean, we truly are. I mean, a lot of these politicians and so forth, they are puppets of the elite. And this is an agenda. It's a bigger picture. I think we can look at it politically, and most people can relate to that a little bit easier than, you know, when we talk about, even though the truth is, you know, the elite, you know, whatever you want to call them, the elitists certainly do play a big part in generating and controlling what is happening.
I mean,
we do have an agenda of a new world order. We do have an agenda of globalization, and that is controlled by a lot more than just our government.
But I think part of one of the big differences is, you know, if you're the elite, you're the elite. Okay, fine. I don't have a problem with that. If you've earned your money, I don't have a problem. Anybody,
no.
If you've earned.
Those aren't the elite that I'm talking about.
Well, I don't know which elite you're talking about. I mean,
I'm
just
saying,
insofar as you use your money to bribe congressmen and senators to pass laws to allow you to make even more money, that's wrong. And that's where we are right now. We've got people. The mindset is, how much can you hustle? How much can you grab hold of? Doesn't matter whether you earn it or not, just how much do you get? And to me, that's one of the that's a dangerous attitude. It's just contrary to the best interest of the country. It needs to be, how much did you earn? Not how much did you hustle? Not whether or not you got to Congressman Smith and you gave him, you know, I don't know what the going rate is, but you bribed him $25,000 or $50,000 or however much it takes to bribe a congressman to front for a bill that'll help you make extra money by robbing the American people. So it comes down to, all that special interest legislation means we'll pass laws that, if you give me money, I will pass laws that will help you to rob the American people. And the more special interest legislation we have, the more laws we have that favor the special interests, and of course, the great unwashed are going to get increasingly impoverished, because they're the ones that are the victimized by the special interest legislation.
But there is a select agenda, and for those who rule that area, they're greater than those that are just that have done well, that are just so called the elite.
Oh.
I mean, you look at but
for me, it's not a question of identifying who the bad guys are exactly. It's a question of identifying the bad philosophy, the bad morality, the bad system of ethics that allows these things to take place.
But you need to identify the bad guys that go along with, or you're just fighting against something that you can never win. You need to identify who the enemy is.
The enemy to me is, I know that there are enemies, but for me, the enemy is more of an idea than an individual or even a group.
But those ideas come from individuals.
I get that. They're promoted by individuals for their own self-interest. So, but if you can identify them and you can say, but here's the way I think it should be, and you can get enough people to say, you know, I think he's right. I think it should be like that. That makes sense to me. If you can get enough people, then we have, you know, a political struggle to see whose idea will prevail.
But you can get those ideas, but you still don't know what to do with them if you don't know who's behind it all. But I just got this report out. The Treasury Department says today that Japan overtook China in February as the top foreign holder of U.S. Treasury securities,
yep,
a position Japan last held in August of 2008. Now, what that sounds like to me, it sounds like, well, gee, it seems like Japan is beginning to buy up more treasuries, right? Because now they're number one.
They'd be dumb.
Let me tell you how they got into that number one position. In the latest report, the department says its total foreign holdings of treasury debt slipped 0.9% in February to $6.16 trillion, down from a record of $6.22 trillion in January. The holdings of China, normally the top holder of the treasury debt, slipped 1.2% to $1.22 trillion. The holdings of Japan fell 1.1% from the January level. So it isn't that Japan is buying more debt. It's just that China's decline was a little bit larger than Japan's to allow Japan to slip into the top spot at $700 million above China. So
So they won the award. Japan has won the award.
But it wasn't in a record as far as them purchasing more debt. It's just their holdings fell. They purchased less debt, but China purchased far less.
It's like one of those
race to the bottom.
The military, where they say, whoever volunteers, take two steps forward. And there's six guys standing there in a line, and five of them take two steps back and leave the guy who didn't take any steps at all. He's going to be the volunteer to go on the mission that will probably get him killed. It's an old joke, but it happens.
So the sign there is that even your foreign countries are, even though as we're hitting the top amount of debt, you have countries that are not buying as much.
I know.
They're pulling away.
Yeah,
and what happens when that continues?
No, it just depends on how long, how fast.
Our rates will have to go up. They'll have to entice them in here somehow.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So maybe this is why the discussions have become a little bit stronger of late, because these were January, the first quarter numbers. So
the discussions about raising interest rates, that's what you're talking
about?
Well,
that's when they really become strong, yeah. I mean, they started, last year, but
they may do it. I don't know. I don't doubt that they might raise, especially they might make a gesture and raise it a couple of basis points or whatever, but I don't expect anything serious. They raise interest rates. It's going to mean it's that much harder to borrow. Government is the biggest borrower in the country. They can't stand higher interest rates. If they can't have raising interest rates, they can't borrow as much money to allegedly stimulate the economy. It'll slow the economy. The economy is already in peril. I just don't see how they can easily justify raising interest rates. They might do it just make a gesture, but significant rise seems very unlikely to me, but we'll watch and see.
I think they're doing the same thing to these rates as they are doing to the tapering of quantitative easing. But I agree. I mean, this is a lot different than tapering off the quantitative easing. And I just don't believe they can raise their rates. If they do raise them, I think they'll test the water to see what the markets do. If the markets tank, they won't do any more. They'll try to raise them. But again, if no one's buying the debt, they're going to be forced into raising these rates. And so which is the worst of two evils?
I understand they're caught between the rock and the hard place. I think one of the things that strikes me as funny, ironic, even hilarious about all this is the Federal Reserve is arguably the biggest single lender to the United States government, at least over the past several years. They've allegedly they've bought in the neighborhood $2.5-3 trillion worth of bonds from the United States government. But if the Federal Reserve is setting the interest rate at or near zero, the Federal Reserve is guaranteeing that it is not going to make any money to speak of off the loans to the government. Now, I know that the Federal Reserve is just spinning this currency out of thin air. And you can't just say they're losing money, but it has to gall them that they are effectively lending money to the government at a rate where they're never going to make a profit. Huh? So the Federal Reserve is caught in a strange position. They'd like to have interest rates higher just so they can make more money off the money they're lending to the government. But they are sacrificing their own self-interests, or at least so it appears, to keep interest rates low and allow the government to continue borrowing at little or no rates and allow the government to maintain the illusion that it's solvent and stimulating and good for all of us, right?
I think the Federal Reserve's true interest is Wall Street. And, I believe you don't know what they can do with all their, to the access of the programs that they have and that they can create as they need to. And, if they're having a little bit of a problem, we'll create this other program to offset any of the problems that are occurring.
There's no telling what's really going on. There's no telling how much money is really being printed, injected, whatever. But the whole thing is a house of cards. You can see it. You look close at it, and you might think you're ignorant. But the truth is you're just looking at something that's so fraudulent that the only thing you can't understand is how is this thing still standing? It's not because people are ignorant. It's because they have trouble believing the criminality and the fraud that's right before their eyes. There must be some other explanation. I don't think there is. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.